Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And guys, this is one of our most action-packed episodes to date. We have so much to cover, and I'm so excited. Now, this is the episode I want episode 200 to be, but instead it's episode 201. So sometimes beggars can't be choosers, as we have so much to cover today. The major thing, the big thing, UFC 317 goes down this weekend, and you best bet we are going to be covering the entire event. I'm so pumped to cover it. It's going to be exciting. Topuria, Charles Oliveira. Your full predictions for all 12 fights comes at you on today's episode as well. Night of Champions. That's right. WWE giving us another PLE. This time in Saudi Arabia. They are braving the U.S.-Iran conflict and they're going over to Saudi Arabia still. We got predictions for all the matches that are going down and talk about what we think will happen from there as well. We have a movie review, a TV show review, some new UFC updates in terms of fights and rankings. We got a bunch of jam-packed episode for you. This is going to be fun. I'm excited for this one. I'm also excited to see where the rest of 2025 takes us. I'm still applying places, still trying to find a job, and still trying to work out if I can build a studio for this podcast as we've recorded over 200 episodes now, and I'm still yet to really officially film myself. I've been meaning to do it for so long, but hey, better late than never. I say we jump right on into things. No better time than the present. With the first thing on today's docket, new UFC fights. As the UFC, they've been releasing fights left, right, and center, and they've released some big ones. So these are announced in no particular order. Actually, I'm going to go over these in order of interesting to least interesting to most interesting. So kicking us off, first new fight that we have, UFC Vegas 108 going down August 2nd, has a bantamweight matchup between Rinya Nakamura and Nathan Fletcher. Nathan Fletcher back from a loss to, I don't even know who it was. He does hold a win over Zygmantas Rzmoska. You know, if that counts for a thing. I think Nathan Fletcher might have been the runner-up on The Ultimate Fighter. I'm going to be honest, I don't have the slightest idea. But for Rinya Nakamura, we know about him. The wins over Tomisha Kazuma, Fern Garcia, and Carlos Vera are all good. But he unfortunately suffered his first defeat this year against someone who I can't really remember. He should have beaten them, and he didn't. It was probably an aging veteran, but nonetheless, Rinya Nakamura back looking to avenge his first loss, and when he takes on Nathan Fletcher, I'm probably riding with the Japanese man, Rinya Nakamura. We actually have a short notice matchup going down on today's card at UFC Vegas, UFC 317, between Jackson McVeigh, who stepped in on short notice to fight, Cedric Dumas, after we had a pullout, and then Cedric Dumas pulled out. So now stepping in on short notice is Christopher El Tanque Ewart. We'll be covering that fight later, but that is a new UFC fight that has recently come across our feed. And another one for you, UFC Paris. That's right, we already have the second bout announced for UFC Paris. We'll be talking about the first one in just a second, but lightweight action is Balaji Oki back in action, coming off his win over Timmy Kwamba as he takes on Mason Jones, who most recently beat Jeremy Stevens. Also holds a win over David Onama. Like, Mason Jones is very talented, 16-2, don't get it twisted. The man from Wales is hungry and ready to make another run at lightweight, but Balaji, the Zulu Warrior Oki, he's from Belgium. He will not make it easy. That should be a fun fight on presumably the prelims. Could maybe sneak to the main card. We'll have to see how the UFC is feeling when they deal with that one. Here's another matchup for you on that UFC Paris card. Rinat Fakhretdinov in the men's welterweight division is back as he takes on Andreas Bain Gustafsson. Andreas Gustafsson, pretty good debut over Chaos Williamson, dominated him 30-27. For Rinat Fakhretdinov, 5-0 with a draw, wins over Kevin Lee, Brian Battle, Nicholas Dalby. He's pretty freaking good. Now, his one draw did leave little to be desired, I'll say, against Nicholas Dalby. Also, the win over Carlos Leal wasn't the most interesting, but this guy is 23-1. And I think he's on like a 22-fight unbeaten streak, so this fight should be very entertaining, and whoever wins this is most definitely getting a ranked opponent in their next contest. Another matchup for you, this one for UFC 318, July 19th, one of the most active fighters, you know him, you love him, number 14th ranked welterweight, Kevin Trailblazer Holland, back again, man, third appearance in 2025, he takes on Daniel Rodriguez. Kevin Holland said it perfectly, I don't want to fight top guys, I want to fight aging welterweights, and he gets another one in Rodriguez. You know, D-Rod, he's all right, he's fun. I can't remember if his last fight out, he beat Santiago Ponzinibbio. I honestly can't remember, but hey, Daniel Rodriguez, always in the mix. Actually, he knocked out Santiago Ponzinibbio, didn't he, in a fight that he was losing. I think that's the case, but Kevin Holland, coming off a massive submission win over Sente Luque. If he wins this one, I think they're going to give him a top guy, but we can curate Kevin Holland's run to the top. I kid you not, when I look at the UFC rankings, I can find a way. Kevin Holland wins this one, It'll then be a 3-fight winning streak. We can have him fight Stephen Wonderboy Thompson again, maybe. We can have him fight Jeff Neal, Gilbert Burns, maybe Colby Covington. Then once he's in the top 10, he can fight Leon Edwards. We can get Trailblazer a title shot, I kid you not. But that should be a fun one. Throw it on the main card for 318. Goodness knows 318 needs fights. All right, let's start with this one. UFC Paris has its main event September 6th. The number one ranked middleweight Nazarbek Imavov takes on the number 6 ranked Kyle Barallo. And Nazarbek gave himself a nickname after knocking out Israel Adesanya, the Russian sniper. Nazarbek, Russian sniper Imavov. I kind of mess with it. As for Kyle Barallo, he is 7-0 in the UFC. Nazarbek's 8-2. He's on a 5-fight winning streak or something. This is the perfect matchup. Winner of this will get a title shot. Presumably, the winner of this is taking on the winner of DDP and Khamzat. You know, I think that's going to be the case. This is going to be action-packed. This is going to be exciting. I don't know. My money's probably going to be on Kyle Barallo, but it's 50-50. I kid you not, both of these guys are super, super talented. The main event, this is a perfect main event to do in Paris, I think is going to deliver 100%. Something else that's going to deliver the following weekend after Paris, Noche UFC, San Antonio, Texas, officially a fight night at the Frostbank Center. Featherweight main event, the number 2 ranked Diego Lopez takes on the number 11 ranked Gene Silva. Why is this fight happening now? Are they like, we better do this fight now in case an asteroid comes down or something, in case the United States gets nuclear bombed and UFC goes away forever? Then no. Absolutely not. This is insane. Diego Lopez coming off of one of the fights of the year, best title fight so far of the year, against Alexander Volkanovski. And Gene Silva, he just put Bryce Mitchell's lights on. I mean, we're really speedrunning Gene Silva to the top here, if it's possible. This is a 50-50 fight. These two are both so high level. These two both hunt for finishes. I mean, this is a perfect main event. This is all you could ever want in a UFC main event. And I can't believe we get to get it. So UFC Noche, Diego Lopez, Gene Silva. It is going to be as good as advertised, guys. And UFC Noche, they're going to load up with a bunch of Mexican fights. And you got two Brazilians headlining. Although Diego Lopez probably identifies from Mexico. I don't know. Very good fight, though. Right there. Some other stuff that has been updated. This will be its own little section here. The UFC rankings. UFC rankings, a lot of updates. A lot of updates following UFC Baku and with the departure of John Jones. So let's dive right on into them. First off, women's bantamweight, Darius Liandakova gets the bump to the number 15 spot in the women's bantamweight rankings, replaces Chelsea Chandler. Now, I don't think she should go up. I think Daria should fight Claudia Segula, who also won on the card. Winner of that can take on your Carol Rosa, your Misha Tate, your Jocelyn Edwards, and Maribel Silva loser. That's what you can do there. But Daria Zlyankova, now ranked number 15, she can now say she's a ranked UFC fighter. Congratulations to her. Women's flyweight, Jasmine Jasudovicic gets a bumped up to number 5, tied with Macy Barber now at number 5. I presume they're going to have Jasmine take on Manon Fiorot next. That would be my guess. There's also a way they run Erin Blanchfield, but Manon Fiorot, Alexa Grasso, Erin Blanchfield, Jasmine Jasudovicic, I think they're all going to be in the mix because I don't think Macy Barber's going to be fighting anytime soon. But Jasmine Jasudovicic is now a top 5 women's flyweight in the world. Congratulations. No changes at women's strawweight or women's women's pound for pound, but we go to the men's heavyweight. Massive changes. John Jones out, Tom Aspinall in. Everyone gets a bump up. Some notable ones. Cyril Gane, now the number 1 contender. Volkov, now the number 2. Waldo Cortez Acosta, the number 6 guy. Are you freaking kidding me? Just unreal. How is he the number 6 guy in the world? Coming in at number 15, Rizvan Kuniev. I love the move. He took Curtis Blaydes. He took the now number 4 heavyweight on the planet to a close split decision. 50-50 split decision, by the way. No one was going to say this was a robbery. Insane. Glad he's in there. And, you know, there's a lot of options for him. Number 12, Mick Parkin. Loser of Talshan Teixeira and Derek Lewis. Tai Tuivasa, Shamil Gaziev. Rizvan Kuniev, I think, is going to go on a little run until he reaches that Halton Almeida, Sergey Pavlovich, Alexander Volkov area. Then we're in trouble. But right now, I mean, I think Tom Aspinall beats every active heavyweight. So heavyweight should be in for a good, good future. But it looks like they're going to try and do maybe an October event between Tom Aspinall and Cyril Gane. But we'll have to stay tuned for that. Moving down in weight to light heavyweight, we have Khalil Roundtree Jr. up to number 4 with his win over Jamal Hill. Jumps 3 spots and Jamal Hill drops 2 spots. He's now ranked number 6. And Rakic also gets a bump down to number 7 since he was above Khalil Roundtree Jr. Khalil most likely is going to have to wait a bit. You know, I hear they might do Jiří versus Carlos Ulberg. Winner gets the next title shot. Alex Pereira now has the potential to go up to heavyweight and fight Tom Aspinall. There's a lot of options right now, so Khalil going to sit in the wings. As for Jamal Hill, get a pick-me-up win. Fight a lower guy, Dominic Reyes, Azamat Mirzakhanov, Bogdan Guska, fight guys like that. Xiong Ming Yang and Johnny Walker winner. Do fights like that. This guy is definitely in need of a break. He needs to stop fighting top-level talent. Middleweight division, Abus Magomedov moves up from 15 to 14. He's now tied with Roman Kapilov for some reason. There's not even a number 15 guy. There's two number 14 guys. I think the rankings committee just got a little bored and was like, let's just do this. But Abus, I got him facing either the loser of Paulo Costa versus Roman Kapilov, or the winner of Gregory Rodriguez versus Jack Hermanson. I think either of those matchups would be perfect for Abus Magomedov. Moving to welterweight, Michael Morales is now tied at 7 with Joaquin Buckley. I think Morales and Leon Edwards are tied to a fight. I think that is the perfect move to make right there, and that is a fight that should be made if it is currently, if not, in the works. Lightweight, Rafael Fiziev up to 10, passes to Naoto Moicano, who fights this weekend against the number 9 ranked Beneil Dariush. Fiziev, Matheus Cameron, I think that fight writes itself. I say we book that. Grant Dawson also passed Benoit St. Denis from 14 to 13. I don't know if Grant Dawson has any fight news coming up, but I don't know who he can matchmake him with. Maybe Joel Alvarez, maybe someone else. It's a mystery. Featherweight, Brian Ortega is now tied at number 6 with Arnold Allen, as I'm hearing they might try and do Brian Ortega versus Aljamain Sterling. Could be a play of some sorts. I do think Brian Ortega moving to lightweight would be a good move, but also I think Brian's past his prime, so may have to just leave him be. At bantamweight, Mario Bautista moves up one spot to 8. I think Mario versus winner of Rob Font and Song Yadong could be a potential move. Devyson Figueiredo, he could even take on, if Marcus McGee beats Pierre Dion, Mario Bautista versus Marcus McGee. A lot of options with him. Bantamweight is getting a bit crowded at the top. Flyweight, Joshua Van is passed by Tagir Limbekov, who moves up to number 11, and I think Tagir Limbekov should take on Manel Cape. Well, I think that's the next fight you should do there. Also, Kai Sakura passes Bruno Silva from 15 to 14. Kai Sakura is, of course, taking on the number 10, Tim Elliott, coming up. And as for Bruno Silva, there's going to be a lot of guys that want to fight him. You got Jose Ochoa, who I really think it should be, Andre Lima, Loner Kavanaugh, a lot of options there. Then the final rankings update. Here you go. Men's pound for pound with the departure of John Jones, Ito Pira at number 3, Driscus number 4, Magomed 5, Volk 6, JDM 7, Tom Aspinall jumps 3 spots to number 8. Amazing work. Utterly amazing. Tom Aspinall is now a top 10 pound-for-pound fighter. And joining the crowd at number 15, Khamzat Chimaev. You forgot about Khamzat? Yeah, Khamzat Chimaev should definitely be a pound-for-pound fighter. I mean, think about Khamzat versus Arman Tsarukyan versus Charles Oliveira versus Bilal Muhammad versus Max Holloway versus Alexander Badoa versus Alex Pereira. I mean, maybe Tom Holland gives him some trouble, but yeah, not Tom Holland, Tom Aspinall, you know. Khamzat Chimaev, an absolute menace. Can't wait to watch him fight in August. But that's your UFC rankings update, guys. A lot went down. John Jones is gone. A new era of heavyweights has dawned. And I'll tell you what, I am more than excited to watch that go down. I'm kind of sick of all this Tom Aspinall, John Jones situation. Ready to move on and actually get the belt being defended. I'll tell you what else was being defended. My personal opinions when I went to go see How to Train Your Dragon. In a little movie review here, that's right. I went to the theater the other day and I saw the brand new movie, How to Train Your Dragon. And guys, it is just like the original, but live action. They did an amazing job with this. Amazing job with this movie. 77% Rotten Tomatoes, 8.1 out of 10 IMDb. It gets the rare 10 out of 10 from Zachary Ruger. That's right. This is a 10 out of 10 movie, in my opinion. I love the trilogy. One of my favorite trilogies of all time. Favorite animated movies of all time, number 1 and number 2. I'm not as familiar with number 3. But I could investigate some more. Number 3, maybe a little emotion. Actually, all 3 have made me emotional. And there's the part, of course, if you don't know anything about this movie, you're 15 years too late, but the part where Hiccup, of course, falls off and you think they died, I felt the emotion from Gerald Butler out, crying as a father over his son and just seeing Toothless lay there. I mean, truly, truly, I was getting a little teary-eyed. It was really getting to me. The pacing's amazing. They do the casting. Everyone's complaining about the casting. I love the casting. Who's ever hating on this is literally just a professional hater. You know, I think Mason Thames does an amazing job as Hiccup. Truly. Nico Parker. You know, I get people saying, oh my gosh, they cast a light-skinned girl instead of a blonde girl. No, I'll tell you right what. Nico Parker as Astrid, amazing. Amazing. Gerald Butler as Stoic the Vast. Dude, I cannot watch him die in How to Train Your Dragon 2. They're making a How to Train Your Dragon 2. I almost hope they switch up How to Train Your Dragon 2, because if they make it like How to Train Your Dragon 2, the actual film, oh my gosh, it's going to be jerking on the heartstrings, guys. Let me tell you that. Nick Frost as Gobber. I was trying to figure out, who is Gobber in this film? Who is Gobber? And he's Nick Frost. And then I was trying to figure out, where have I seen Nick Frost from, and I was going through it, and I legit couldn't figure it out, and as I was going to go and pull up movies, it turns out I still don't know. I legit have no idea where I know Nick Frost from, but I know Nick Frost just from watching TV and stuff, and he was phenomenally cast in this movie. I mean, he also had Julian Dennison as Fishlegs, phenomenal. I thought the twins were pretty good, despite one being like super accurate and one being a bit bigger, but you know, beggars can't be choosers. You also had Peter Serafinowicz as this hilarious character as it's not Loud's dad or whatever. It was super funny, but yeah, just amazing, just utterly amazing. I was pleasantly surprised with How to Train Your Dragon. I thought the choreography was great. The soundtrack was amazing. I mean, the visuals here are so good. And the CGI is perfect. These dragons look like straight out of the movie. A bit more realism. Now, every single dragon except Toothless looks pretty realistic. But Toothless, you have to mind you, is not your average dragon. You know, he's not your average dragon. He's much more special than that. But yes, I gave this a 10 out of 10. You know, I can't even lie. I'm an honest man. It is a 10 out of 10 movie. It's insane this movie came out in 2010. It's insane this movie came out in 2010. It is fantastic. It is fantastic. What is this? Is How to Train Your Dragon LGBT? Why is that being searched on Google? Well, it doesn't feature a character, Gobber, who's implied to be gay. What? Gobber is not gay. In the second film, Gobber makes a comment about why he never married, adding in another reason, which Dector confirms reference to Gobber's sexuality. Yeah, that's super gay. I'm not even going to deal with that, but yeah. How to Train Your Dragon, amazing movie. Please go check it out. Please let me know what you think, because I want other people to just experience this and all its amazingness. I mean, it truly brings you joy and makes you happy. I was like, my jaw was dropped at points. I was gaping with excitement, and pretty much scene for scene, dialogue for dialogue, it's the exact same thing from the animated film, which is exactly how every single adaptation should be from the animated to live action. Take notes, How to Train Your Dragon, 10 out of 10 movie. Go check it out today. Actually, what is the box office for this? I wonder how much of it, I don't know if they've announced it, but it's already made back enough, because 2027, you're getting How to Train Your Dragon 2. Yes, budget $150 million. It came out last week, already has $370 million. So that's all you need to know. This movie is amazing. Tell you what else is amazing, guys. It's been out for a while, but I just got around to watching it. That is the show Succession. And I was always a little hesitant. I'm like, Succession isn't as good as advertised. Finally got around to watching it. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. This is a phenomenal, phenomenal show. Another 10 out of 10 from Zachary Ruger in the TV series ranking. I mean, this show, every single episode leaves you wanting more. The entire premise of Succession, for no one that knows. By the way, I didn't explain How to Train Your Dragon, because you should know the premise of that movie, but Succession, the entire premise is you have Logan Roy, who's this billionaire, he's this media empire legend, he's just this old billionaire guy, and it's rumored he's going to retire, and he's basically passing on the business to one of his three children. You have Kendall Roy, played by Jeremy Strong, who might just be my favorite performance of all time. You also have Shiv Roy, played by Sarah Snook, and Roman Roy, played by Kieran Culkin, I think, has won a couple Oscars for his roles in this. And that's essentially the premise there, but just goes through their lives and the themes of greed and just always wanting more and selfishness are on display here, and you feel emotionalness and attachment to these characters, and it is phenomenal. Matthew McFadden as Tom in this show, oh my goodness, amazing. Brian Cox's role as Logan Roy, I hate to say it, Brian Cox, but you have solidified yourself as being a character. You know how, like, Chris Evans is Captain America, how who plays Thor? Chris Hemsworth is Thor. Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man. Yeah, Brian Cox is Logan Roy. That's how good he performs here. Matthew McFadden is Tom. You know, I think one of the more underrated performances from here, because he was in Pride and Prejudice, and that was much more dramatic. Here, he's showing a comedic, serious tone. Just shows the range of him. Alexander Skarsgård comes on in the final season. He's amazing. You also have J. Smith Cameron as Jeremy. Just amazing. Just amazing. Stewie is funny in this. He's a character. But no, this show is an 8.8 out of 10 IMDb, 95% Rotten Tomatoes. It has such good reviews. And the ending is so shocking. So shocking. Every season has a good cliffhanger. It's rare you see a show get better every season. This show does. 4 seasons. I think the lowest they got was the first 3, which was in the 7 or 8s. After that, it was all greens. It was all 9 or 9.5s. And by the way, episode 4 of season 4, a 9.9 out of 10 rated on IMDb. So it is one of the highest rated episodes of all time. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. This show is so recommended. The casting's done so well. the tension. And one of my favorite things about this is the show has scenes where you legit have to walk away or pause the TV and walk away because you can feel the awkwardness, the tension. It is just, it courses through you. You're like, how is this show having such an effect on me? And it truly is. And it really, I feel, opens a perspective on what it is like in these billionaire and these rich, rich families where money is just endless. Like, they can do whatever they want. And it really shines a light on that, the perspectives and how they go about their business deals and stuff. And I think that's another thing I really, really liked about this show. But yeah, it gets a 10 out of 10 for me. Jesse Armstrong is the writer of this. He also wrote the movie Mountainhead we watched, which Mountainhead was not good, but Succession is super good. You can watch it on HBO Max or Max, whatever you call it. And yeah, it sucks that it ended in 2023 and the entire cast is like, yeah, I'd come back and portray some more. But the showrunner's like, yeah, I ended at a good point. And I kind of like how they ended it because it doesn't really end like typical shows. It's not like the ending everyone expects. It catches you really off guard and all pretty much none of the characters are in a happy place except for a few. It is phenomenal. It is phenomenal. Succession. Highly recommended. Check it out. What more can I say? 10 out of 10. Wow. Beautiful. And I'll tell you something else that is equally beautiful, and that is this sports entertainment phenomenon known as WWE. That is right, guys. We got another WWE PLE to give our predictions for, even just our thoughts on what we think is going to happen as Clash of Champions goes down this upcoming Saturday about noon o'clock in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. That is for Minnesota time, Central time, if you will, and yeah, we're already here. The end of June, the halfway point of the year for the WWE. And we've got six matches as of right now to discuss with you. And this is a loaded card. This is an absolutely loaded card. And what more could you want? No more because you want for going to Saudi Arabia. They pay all that big oil money to see what's going to happen, and they're getting a lot of show action here, let me tell you that. Now, we were supposed to have an Intercontinental Championship match between Dominic Mysterio and AJ Styles. Apparently, Dom got injured. I think he just heard what was going on. I was like, yeah, you know, I'm gonna stick back here in California. I'm going to stick away from all that, so Dominic Mysterio is not going to be on here against AJ Styles, but we do have the rare six match card from what's-his-face, Triple H. Thank you, Hunter Hurts Helmsley, for a six match card, so let's get right on into it, and we will go from probably the least type to the most type. So, kicking us off, you got Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Rodriguez in a street fight. This has just been a filler feud for Rhea Ripley. You know, she's someone who, she's basically like John Cena, like CM Punk. Like, you could always have those guys in the main title picture, but sometimes you gotta pull them away from a bit because you just can't over bombard everyone with them in the title picture. So she's taking on Raquel Rodriguez in this little street fight feud. And what do I think's gonna happen here? I think Rhea Ripley's gonna win. I hope we just see some excitement. You know, it is kind of crazy. You're gonna be seeing two women go at it in a street fight in Saudi Arabia on WWE television. I think that's amazing. But yeah, there's really not much to say here. I'm just hoping for some excitement. I don't even know if I'm gonna be watching it, but Rhea Ripley should beat this one. If you want to go for a swerve and really push Raquel Rodriguez, you can give Rhea Ripley the L here, maybe with some shenanigans from Liv Morgan. But, you know, Liv Morgan's hurt, so I don't really see that. And Raquel Rodriguez, I don't know if people are going to really get behind her if she beats Rhea Ripley. But you never know, so Rhea Ripley beating her here, probably the smartest choice with Women's Evolution coming up. I don't know exactly what's going to be taking place, so we'll see what goes from there. Next up, Sami Zayn versus Karrion Kross. And the Karrion Kross has been being clamored for a while by WWE fans pretty much since post-WrestleMania to get a push. I mean, people are behind this guy. People are supporting him, and they just haven't really given it. Like, you could have really given him a World Heavyweight Championship opportunity, and people would have bought it. But here, we have him taking on Sami Zayn, and this is kind of the same feud he was doing with AJ Styles. He wants this good guy to turn heel for some ulterior motive. I think Karrion Kross is a heel. I think that's what he's labeled as, but the fans, they cheer for him. This is a dude they got on WWE main event before the shows even start, and he's getting loud pops from the crowd. People are cheering for him. So, really going to be interested in what they do here. You would think Sami Zayn is the easy option, but going to be honest, I'm going to go with Karrion Kross. I really, really think that Karrion Kross might get the better of Sami Zayn. Like, he's trying to draw out this dark energy from Sami Zayn, make him act like a heel. And I think having Karrion Kross portray that element of almost this bad guy trying to change the will of a good guy could really work here. But then again, we are in Saudi Arabia. Sami Zayn is very over there. So, you know, actually, let's not even act like WWE likes Karrion Kross. Sami Zayn is going to win this one. You know, Saudi Arabia always gets fan service. And as much as we would love to see Karrion Kross win, as much as I think Karrion Kross can really develop a feud for the World Heavyweight Championship, it's just not going to happen here. So we're going to go with Sami Zayn. And this is the final of our two short notice fights. Now let's get into the big four that we knew were going to happen and are just four massive matchups. And I cannot wait to see what happens. First up, the singles match for the WWE United States Championship between Jacob Fatu and Solo Sikoa. I was watching the Friday Night SmackDown when this was made. It was phenomenal. This feud, it doesn't feel rushed, but it's almost just like, this feels like a SummerSlam match. I don't know if they swear going to run it back at SummerSlam, which goes down in August, the biggest SummerSlam of all time, but I certainly wasn't expecting this to just go down at Night of Champions. I really wasn't, and it's really good. You know, Solo Sikoa is kind of this leader who Jacob Fatu didn't feel was fit. We all knew Fatu was the strongest of the new bloodline, and Fatu was the first to win gold out of them. In a way, tag team championships do not count, and now he's the United States champion, and Solo Sikoa was talking trash about him, and now these two are going to go at it, and I think it's pretty obvious Jacob Fatu is going to win. Now, I could see the world where you have JC Mateo get involved in a disqualification finish where you drag this out just through the month of July as we get to the first week of August for the SummerSlam, as I don't know if we're doing APLEs. We're doing Saturday night's main event July 12th. Then we have Women's Evolution the day after. And I don't know if Clash and I don't think we have any more until SummerSlam. So you can really drag this out a month, which is being dragged out a lot. But we'll see. Hikuleo is rumored to be debuting. He could get in here and mess things up. But Jacob Fatu over Solo Sikoa, whether clean, whether by disqualification, he is retaining this United States Championship here. I just do not see them pulling the trigger on Solo Sikoa. Gives me the Karrion Kross vibes, although Solo Sikoa has gotten much more star power as late. Remember, he made event in SummerSlam last year. Let's not act like he didn't made event SummerSlam last year. Put on a, I thought, pretty decent matchup with Cody Rhodes. So, Jacob Fatu over Solo Sikoa. Surprised we're getting it now, but I absolutely love it. Next up, Queen of the Ring Tournament Final. The winner is crowned Queen of the Ring and receives a match for the respective brand's World Championship at SummerSlam. And who do we have? Well, let's go through the bracket real quick. First up, we had a Fatal 4-Way match between Jade Cargill, Mission, Nia Jax, and Piper Nevin. And Jade Cargill made it through there. We had Kairi Sane, Liv Morgan, Rhea Ripley, and Roxanne Perez. And Roxanne Perez shockingly won it. We then had Roxanne Perez take on Jade Cargill, and Jade Cargill beat her and is in this finals match. On the other side of things, from Raw, Alba Fire, Alexa Bliss, Candice LeRae, and Charlotte Flair went at it, and Alexa Bliss won. Asuka, Ivy Nile, Raquel Rodriguez, and Steffi Vaquer went at it, and Asuka, her big return, which was spoiled by just announcing it prematurely, she won. Alexa Bliss versus Asuka. Asuka wins. You get Jade Cargill versus Asuka, and the winner will be taking on either Tiffany Stratton, if you're Jade Cargill at SummerSlam for the WWE Women's Championship. And then if you're Asuka, you'll be taking on Io Sky for the Women's World Heavyweight Championship, or just World Championship, at SummerSlam against Io Sky. I think there's a lot you can do here. There's a lot you can do here. What I like about this is it's not predictable. It is not predictable. Because on one hand, Asuka wins. We get her versus Io Sky. Banger matchup. Io Sky has done nothing since WrestleMania. And she had an amazing WrestleMania run. You know, it's the same thing as last year. They have a great run with her. And then post-WrestleMania, they don't know what to do with her. Now for Jade Cargill, Tiffy Stratton is in desperate need of a new opponent. Her and Nia Jax have just ran things into the dirt. I mean, it is getting ridiculous. We need to be done with them, if you know what I mean. And what you can have is Jade Cargill put away Tiffany Stratton. Maybe someone cost Tiffany Stratton. I don't know who. Alexa Bliss. And just throwing out a name. And then Naomi cashes in. We run Naomi versus Jade Cargill. Bianca Belair eventually gets mixed in. We can do a lot of fun stuff here. So it all comes down to what angle are they going to go with here. And I'm troubled because on one hand, I think in just a natural in-ring perspective, I would go Jade Cargill. I would really go Jade Cargill, but the WWE occasionally likes to spice things up and not be predictable, so I could see them going with Io Sky versus Asuka, but what I'm going to say is that we can get to Asuka versus Io Sky without Io Sky, or not without Io Sky, without Asuka winning Queen of the Ring easier than we can get to Jade Cargill versus Tiffy Stratton without Jade Cargill winning. So I think Jade Cargill crowning herself as Queen of the Ring, I just can picture her having the crown on her head. It just seems so fitting. Queen Jade Cargill takes on Tiffany Stratton at SummerSlam. That is right. Jade Cargill will beat Asuka in their matchup. And I think it's going to be good. You know, I think these two are great in-ring talents. This is going to be phenomenal. Queen of the Ring will be Jade Cargill. Now, on the other hand, I can't believe this is happening. The King of the Ring tournament final, the men's King of the Ring, who is going to be taking on John Cena versus CM Punk, the winner of that, at SummerSlam? How about Cody Rhodes versus Randy Orton? Why are we getting this just out of nowhere? I needed build-up. I kid you not. I needed build-up. I needed excitement. This needed to be a WrestleMania main event. This needed to be a SummerSlam main event. But no, it's not even going to be the main event on Night of Champions in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. It is kind of upsetting to me. But I won't let my upsettingness get us past the fact that we are getting Cody Rhodes versus Randy Orton. Beggars cannot be choosers when we're asking for matchups like this. So let's go through how these two got here. Was it shocking? I'll say, maybe not. Sami Zayn beating Dom, Braun, and Penta, not shocking. Orton beating LA Knight, Carmelo Hayes, and Aleister Black, a little shocking, but not too much. But then Randy Orton beating Sami Zayn, and by the way, a banger SmackDown match. That was surprising. Cody Rhodes, him getting here, not shocking at all. You know, Jey Uso, of course, he lost the belt, then was immediately put back in, wins a Raw main event, which I had a buddy who was there, and he said it was 10 out of 10. So I love to hear that. And then Cody Rhodes versus Jey Uso gave us one of the better Raw matches I've seen for a while. People just love to hate. You know, these two did a great job. Now, I will say, you know, I would have liked to have more so seen them just pull the trigger on Jey Uso than just having him come back and then lose to Cody Rhodes. But I can kind of see them pulling the aspects with Cody Rhodes, Jey Uso, Randy Orton, Sami Zayn. Like, we're all these guys. They all can't be friends. Someone's got to turn heel. And my money is going to turn heel. Randy Orton and Sami Zayn. Now, is this match predictable? Kind of, but here's the thing. Cody Rhodes versus Randy Orton. Cody Rhodes was always going to win the feud. He was always going to win the feud. But what you have here is you have teacher versus protege, where the protege has reached heights that maybe the teacher never reached. You know, some people, you can even make the case that Cody Rhodes is a bigger star than Randy Orton ever was. Now, I'm not going to say that, but just want to throw that out there. Now, when you're dealing with this feud here, this could be a friendly matchup. This is going to be Owens versus Cody Rhodes. This is going to be first time around. All is done and well. But when Cody Rhodes wins and Randy Orton hoists his hand up high, you're going to see a moment where he chooses to go and hit the RKO. Maybe even they have him hit the RKO on Cody Rhodes post-match. I could see them pulling that trigger as well. And you see him tease, you know, like, I'm not going to be the good guy anymore. I want the WWE Championship, and I'll do whatever it takes. And you see Cody Rhodes versus Randy Orton turn into heel Bald Orton versus face Cody Rhodes. So that's what I think's going to happen. Cody Rhodes is going to win, but if they do swerve us and have Randy Orton win, I mean, I would be so taken aback, I wouldn't know what to do with myself. But that would be awesome. What if we get Randy Orton versus CM Punk at SummerSlam? What a swerve that could be. And honestly, Randy Orton versus CM Punk for the WWE Championship works, and you just do John Cena, Cody Rhodes in a singles match. How about that? But that all depends on what happens in the main event, the singles match for the Undisputed WWE Championship, as John Cena takes on CM Punk. Yet another matchup. We should have done it at Money in the Bank. I wish it would have been at SummerSlam, but nonetheless, it's happening on this card. I swear. Why does Riyadh, Saudi Arabia get such a banger event? I mean, as a viewer, it's going to be awesome, but pretty crazy. And the Saudi crowds, they don't pop like the American crowds and some other foreign crowds do. So I'm just hoping the Saudi crowd delivers, because John Cena versus CM Punk is a retelling of their 2011 feud. It's done perfect so well. John Cena doing a pipe bomb, CM Punk saying that he's not the GOAT. Now, how's this going to all play out? Well, these two are going to have another run-in on the SmackDown beforehand. And what you're probably going to see is CM Punk get the better of John Cena. I just do not see John Cena dropping this belt just yet. I really don't. Honestly, I could see this storyline going so many places. I can see John Cena holding on to it. I could see CM Punk dethroning him. I can see him losing it to Cody Rhodes at SummerSlam. There's so many options. But if we're really doing this like the 2011 feud where roles are reversed, you're going to see CM Punk almost winning this. Seth Rollins is going to come out, tease a cash-in. Seth Rollins is then going to mess up, CM Punk. CM Punk's either going to take out Braun Breaker, take out Seth Rollins, take out Bronson Reed, get back in the ring, low blow, championship shot from Cena. Cena hits him with it, rolls out, escapes with the crowd, just like what happened at Money in the Bank 2011. I mean, they did the pipe bomb. I see run back that scene as well. Now, also, remind you, CM Punk almost won the championship at SummerSlam, and then Alberto Del Rio cashed in. So what I could see is this match being made to be ran back at SummerSlam in a triple threat, Cody Rhodes, John Cena, CM Punk, which I would absolutely love. Then you have Seth Rollins cash in on those three, and he walks away with the championship, and John Cena doesn't even have to be pinned, and then he could go into a feud with Cody Rhodes or CM Punk or whatever. But I really think there's a lot of good we can do out of this match, and honestly, people are going to say, oh, this is going to be a boring matchup. I don't think it'll be. Everyone hated John Cena versus Cody Rhodes. Yeah, that match sucked. Let's not act like John Cena in the Rumble was great. John Cena Elimination Chamber was great. John Cena versus Randy Orton was great. The John Cena R-Truth matches were great. And John Cena at Money in the Bank was great. So let's not act like everything besides WrestleMania hasn't been great from John Cena. So I'm going to go with John Cena to beat CM Punk. That is the safe prediction. But as always, we always like to spice it up with a bunch of theories. So Sami Zayn over Karrion Kross, Rhea Ripley over Raquel Rodriguez, Fatu over Sokoa, Cena over Punk, Jade Cargill over Asuka, and Cody Rhodes over Randy Orton. Are they the predictable predictions? Yes, but I'd rather be predictable and then be caught off guard than try and be super off guard on my predictions and then just be let down. So that's not what we're going to do. We're going to play it safe, and that is what we are going to go with. But those are our Night of Champions predictions and thoughts. We are a little bit WWE nerds here on the podcast. But with that, guys, let's get into our UFC 317 predictions. This is a great card. I was already hyped about this beforehand. Obviously, the main event is the one fight where it's going to happen and all eyes are going to be glued to the TV. But elsewhere on the card, there is sneaky good things. So let's get right into our official UFC 317 predictions and full card preview. Kicking off our seventh UFC pay-per-view of the year, we head to the men's middleweight division for that very interesting match where I was talking about earlier. We have Chris El Tanque Ewart takes on Jackson the Moose McVey. Both men stepping in on short notice and yet somehow facing one another. That's right, we were supposed to have Cedric Dumas, I believe, just taking on Jax McVay in a short notice fight, but Cedric Dumas couldn't get his freaking ankle monitor off, so nonetheless, his fight was canceled. So yeah, Cedric Dumas definitely won't be back. I mean, he's been arrested 14 times and has had 6 UFC fights. He has had double the arrests than he has UFC fights. I don't know how that's statistically possible, but nonetheless, we will get this short notice contest between these two up-and-comers. I mean, little is known. Little is known about these two. Jackson McVey is coming into this contest. He is 26 years old from St. Louis, Missouri, and of his 6 wins, he has 6 finishes, 3 KOs, and 3 subs. His last win was June 13th, 2024, and all of his wins have came in round number 1. I think it was June 13th, 2025. Actually, if I'm not mistaken, he might have fought 2 weeks ago. I think my boy Jackson fought 2 weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken. And just from his profile picture, he looks like kind of a hillbilly. But I mean, you know what? I don't want to see anything about people from Missouri, so we'll just leave Jackson at that. But yeah, this is his first ever contest with the promotion. And same goes for Chris El Tanque Ewart. He's 31 years old, 5 years older, from Chile. Coming in 5 knockouts out of his 7 wins. And his last win was January 12th. So both these boys have already fought in this year. I don't know, guys. You know, we got a 31-year-old. We got a freaking 26-year-old Jackson. I just don't know anything about him. Christopher Ewart, don't know much about him. This one is Emmert, actually. It's Christopher Emmert. I'm calling him Ewart. It is Ewart. I wrote Emmert in my notes, so I'm just a terrible writer, I guess. But yeah, I don't even have a guess. And I hate these because they're 50-50 contests, which are just never ideal. But I don't know, does the Tapeology give us any help? We'll do some live Tapeology checking on the podcast. Tapeology, of course, is a go-to website where I get all of my UFC information before the fights, when we talk about where the fighters are from, what they have done up until this point. This is what we use. And Tapeology for this contest doesn't really have much. 184 to 186, so they weigh the same. 3 inches in height for Jackson. No reach is known on Chris Ewart. He's the number 9 middleweight on the independent scene in Latin America. Jackson McVey is the number 14 for the Middle West. Jackson, getting a little look at him, appears to be somewhat talented. The Moose trains at St. Charles Jiu-Jitsu. This is the deepest we've ever looked at anything. So he trains with Charles Johnson. Okay. Charles Johnson, that is a name I recognize, and appears that he might be the second best person from his freaking gym. So Jackson does fight out of the Minnesota region, so that is good to know. Christopher Ewart, where does he train out of? Nothing. You don't know anything. He's just from Chile. And has 5 knockout wins. Let's see. He was a champion in two promotions. Look, we're not going to spend too much time on this. I'm not even going to overthink this. We are going to go with Jackson McVay. You know, he was originally going to take on Cedric Dumas, and I was maybe going to pick him. So we're going to go with Jackson McVay to win this one, but this is honestly so screwy. This shouldn't even be a UFC fight. I'm actually kind of pissed this is even going down, but it is what it is. Moving on, heavyweight action as Renata Dinez is back in action as he takes on Alvin Goosey Hines. What a freaking nickname. Alvin Goosey Hines, but fun fact, we're actually familiar with Alvin Hines. I'll get to that in just a moment. 8-1 to 7-0, Renata Dinez has the advantage by just two fights. Inexperience. Don't have much on Alvin Hines. A bit of height and a bit of reach for Renata Dinez. Both men fight in the orthodox fighting position. Renata Dinez, as we know, 34 years old from Paraná, Brazil, 7 KOs of his 8 UFC victories. He was actually supposed to fight Vitor Petrino March 8th. That fight fell through, and he's supposed to fight Justin Taffa on this card, and that fight fell through. So Renata Dinez has been clamoring to get a fight, but came off a Dana White's Contender Series with a nice 3-minute knockout, then debuted and knocked out Austin Lane in tremendous fashion, put on a boring performance against Carlos Williams, and then got humbled by Marcin Tybura in a match at UFC 309 in November. But he's back, he's ready, he's gained some experience, and he's revving to go. His opponent, Austin Hines, 33 years old from Minnesota. 6 of his wins have come by finish, 3 KOs and 3 submissions. His last win was June 13th. And guess what? All of his wins have came in the first 2 rounds. Now, of his finishes. And I've actually watched him live. That is right. We went to watch Jimmy Aulis fight, our good buddy who's came on the podcast twice. Go listen to those episodes. They are honestly some of my favorite I've ever done. Alvin was the number 3 fight on the main card, and he actually picked up a round 1 or 2 submission, if I'm not too mistaken. Might have been an Ezekiel choke, a Brado choke, or like an arm stretch. I can't recall, but Alvin Hines, welcome to the UFC. I hope he wins, but gonna be honest, I am just not picking against Renata Dinez in this one. He's got the experience, the knockout power, and as much as Marcin Tybura was whooping him for a time, he started that fight pretty strong. He almost put Marcin out of there right off the bat, so we're not gonna go back on picking Renata Dinez. We would have picked him against pretty much Justin Taffa and whoever they would have thrown at him, but Renata Dinez over Alvin Hines, and we're gonna go with a round 1 knockout. And as for Chris Heward and Jackson McVay, Jackson's had all of his wins by finish. This is his first UFC fight. I think this is one of those fights where it goes to a decision. So that'll be our prediction for that first fight there. Moving down to the welterweight division, we have Nico the Hybrid Price and Jacoby Kobe Smith. Come on. Your nickname can't be the second part of your first name. That's just not how it should work, Jacoby Smith. But it is what it is, and as of right now, he may be closing as a minus 4,000 favorite. You know, he was minus 1,400 Monday, and he was up to minus 4,000 today as of Wednesday the 25th. So Jacoby Smith is looking to be the biggest UFC favorite of all time, just after Michael Wallmelker set that record last weekend. So pretty crazy. Nico, the Hybrid Price, 16-8 with 2 no contests. But Jacoby Smith, 10-0, undefeated. 2 inches in height for Nico, 6'5", 10", and 4 inches in reach, 76-72. Southpaw with that left for Jacoby Smith. Orthodox for the Hybrid, Nico Price. Let's start with Nico, man. You know, he's coming into this one. He's going to be a plus 1,000, plus 800 favorite. It's not going to be pretty. The 35-year-old is from Cape Coral, Florida, and has 13 of his 16 wins by finish, 10 KOs and 3 subs. Now, out of his 8 defeats, he has been finished in 6 of them, including 5 by knockout. And wow. Wow, wow, wow. This is the 13th year of the MMA career for Nico Price. Been with the company since 2016, so this is year number 9. Congratulations. Fought a number of guys along the way. Alan Jobon, Alex Morono, Vicente Luque, Randy Brown, Tim Means, Jeff Neal. A lot of names we recognize. Donald Cerrone, he actually had a overturned win against Donald Cerrone. Actually, it might have been a draw, I think, if I'm not mistaken, but it is what it is. Last win came in June of 2024 over Alex Morono, and the last time he fought was October of that same year when he lost to Themba Garimbo. Got brutally outgrappled. I'll say that. Taken down 7 times for 9 minutes of control time. Yikes. Nico Price, as of late, not too hot. 1-3 in his last 4. And since 2020, he is sitting at a 2-5 with 1 no contest record. So not the best for Nico Price. 35 years old. I mean, it wasn't but 2 years ago. He's getting knocked out by Robbie Lawler in 38 seconds. So we'll see how Nico Price does, but this man has little to no hope as he takes on Kobe Jacoby Smith. 29 years old from Oklahoma, but now fights out of Texas. Fortis, actually. fights out of the Fortis gym with Jeff Neal, Muhammad Usman. I'm trying to think. Alex Morono, actually, we just talked about. All those guys trained there. And of his 10 knockouts, of his 10 wins, he has had 8 knockouts. And 7 of those have came in round number 1. Had a round 2 knockout on Damas Katara series on my birthday, October 1st, 2024. And then in January, on the first event of the year, had a minute and 13 knockout of Preston Parsons. I'll keep it short. I'll keep it sweet. Jacoby Smith, round 1 knockout. Until I see him fail, I'm going to be riding with him. I kid you not. If he gets humbled here, I will go, you know what, I'm not surprised, but this dude is 10-0 with 8 knockouts, and it's just been on absolute tear. And Nico Price's chin is not what it used to be. He's taken a lot of damage over the years. Dropping down once again to lightweight, Terrence T-Rex McKinney back in action against Vyacheslav Slavikaz Borshev. Minus 195 for Terrence, plus 155 for Vyacheslav Bosh. I should have said Diaz is obviously a favorite over Alvin Hines, and I think Chris Ewart and Jax McFair are going to be pretty even in odds. But for this one, oddsmakers have it pretty close, but Terrence has been staying that favorite so far. Not surprised. 16-7 record for Terrence, 8-5 with a draw for Vyacheslav Borshev. 5'11-5'10, 1 inch in height for Vyacheslav, 4 inches in reach for Terrence. 73-69, switch stance for McKinney, orthodox for Slavikaz. Terrence McKinney, 30 years old from Chicago, but now fights out of Orlando. 16 wins, 16 finishes, 8 KOs and 8 subs, 7 losses. 7 times he's been finished, 5 KO losses and 2 by sub. This dude has never been the distance. Mind you, he has never gone past a round 2 except for once in his career back on his independent scene run where he went 30 seconds into round number 3. Only once in his career. So far in the UFC, he has been to a round 2 twice, I believe it is. And I mean, Terrence McKinney, this dude's absolutely crazy. Gets brutally knocked out by Sean Woodson on the Contender Series. Takes a short notice fight against Matt Frivola, 7-second knockout. Then submits Fares Zayam, who, by the way, Fares Zayam, since losing to Terrence McKinney, has gone on a 5-fight winning streak. That's absolutely crazy. Then has one of the craziest one-round fights against Drew Dober, almost finishes him, then gets finished. Then goes out, submits Eric Gonzalez. Then gets hit with one of the KOs of the year in 2023 against Ishmael Bonfim. Then Nazim Sadikov. He almost beats Nazim in round number 1. I do want to point out, he dominated Nazim Sadikov in round number 1, gets submitted a minute into round number 2. Knocks out Mike Breeden in 85 seconds, knocks out Brandon Monroe in 20 seconds, gets hit with another KO of the year, contender against Espan Rivix, who knocks him out in 37 seconds, and last time he fought on February 1st, he beat Demir Hadzovic in 2 minutes and 1 second. Terrence McKinney, action-packed, he gets right in your face from the start. He hasn't been past 4 minutes since 2023. That's absolutely insane. That's actually, you know what? He hasn't been past the 2-minute mark since 2023. That's, wow. That's absolutely insane. His opponent, Vyacheslav Borshev, 33 years old from Volgograd, Russia, but now is actually fighting out Sacramento, California. 6 KOs out of his 8 wins, and of his 5 defeats, he's only been submitted once. So far, came into the UFC, a lot of prowess. A lot of prowess, big knockout on the Contender Series, big knockout in his debut, and he was sitting pretty at 6-0, and then proceeded to get taken down 20 times in 2 fights, 11 against Mark Diakite and 9 against Mike Davis. Comes back, May 2023, knocks out Mahashat in a performance of the night. Then has one of the best fights of 2023 against Nazim Sadikov. Why is it just that Nazim Sadikov is such a beauty on the rise? Then May of 2024, loses to Chase Hooper, but I will say, Chase Hooper is in the prime of his career and, you know, just absolutely got murked by him. Takes on James Lontop in August of last year and honestly had the fight won and started to slip in round number 3. Last time he fought, February 2025 in Australia at UFC 312, and Tom Nolan beat him by decision. Look, Vyacheslav, I love you. You have a puncher's chance, but we're going to go with Terrence McKinney to get a round 1 submission. That's what I think he's going to do. I think he's going to take down Vyacheslav, whose biggest weakness has been the grappling, and he's going to get him out of there. But watch your chin, Terrence, because Vyacheslav, when he wants to hit, he hits pretty freaking hard. So with that, we will move on to the women's flyweight division. We have some ranked women coming at you as the number 10 ranked Tracy Cortez takes on the number 8 ranked Vivian Arujo. Vivi Arujo should be called Vivian the Gatekeeper Arujo, as she repeatedly just stops these women trying to make a rise. Vivian, 13-6, Tracy 11-2, 5'4-5'5, 1 inch in height for Tracy, 3 inches in reach for Vivian, 68-65, orthodox stance for both of our ladies. Plus 185 for Rujo, minus 230 for Tracy Cortez. It's never really mattered for Vivian Arujo. 13 wins, 6 defeats, been with the UFC since 2019, never really done much. gonna be honest, just kind of been there, you know, just kind of been there throughout all of it. She's 7-5 so far in the UFC. She has gone the distance in every single fight since July of 2019. All right, she had a round 3 knockout in May 2019, her debut, and has gone the distance in every single fight. She has actually had one main event against Alexa Grasso back in 2022. That fight went the full distance. Coming off a win over Karine Silva at UFC 309, she was able to stop Karine Silva, who beat her in round 1, then proceeded to drop the last 2 rounds out of nowhere. Before that, lost to Natalia Silva. Before that, beat Jennifer Maia. Before that, lost to Amanda Ribas, lost to Alexa Grasso. Viviana Rujo is just your run-of-the-mill fighter. 38 years old, from Brazil, 3 KOs. Of those wins, oh yeah, 3 KOs. So, a decision machine. She has had one loss by submission, not even in the UFC. Actually, one loss by TKO, too. She's been finished twice. But, yeah, Viviana Rujo, 38 years old. Her ceiling is, we actually look at her losses. I do want to say her last 3 losses are to the number 1, the number 3, and the number, where's Amanda Ribas at? Number 7, women strawweight, that is, women in their respective weight classes. So not too bad of Viviana Rujo, but her game plan, she'll occasionally land a takedown, she'll distance strike you. You can expect what you can expect with this lady. So Viviana Rujo is not going to be the one we're rooting for. It is her opponent, the favorite, 31 years old from Arizona, who, by the way, only 2 finishes of 11 wins. So one knockout, one sub, not the most exciting. One of her 2 defeats is by submission. She was supposed to fight Miranda Maverick in her last fight. Instead, she took on Rose Namajunas and sadly lost. That's right, Tracy Cortez finally back. Tracy Cortez, fan favorite. I wonder why. It's because she's probably the most attractive UFC fighter, respectfully. 5-1 in the UFC. All those by decision. But some big wins. Jasmine Jasu DeVicious. Jasmine Jasu DeVicious is probably her biggest win, which is a great win. You know, that wasn't even but 2 years ago. And Jasmine Jasu DeVicious is now the number 5 woman. So that's aged beautifully. Only losses to Rose Namajunas in a short notice 5-round main event. Not too bad. I got Tracy Cortez taking this one by decision. And if this fight does end in a finish, I will do some outrageous dare. Someone clip this, send it to me, and tell me a dare, and I will do that dare, because there's just no way this fight goes to a finish. There's just no way. Tracy Cortez, 29-28 over Viviana Arujo. From women's flyweight to men's featherweight, we have Haider the Hurricane Amiel taking on Jose Delgado. Haider plus 125, Jose minus 155. The odds are close. 11-0 for Haider Amiel, 9-1 for Jose Delgado. 5'11 to 5'9, 2 inches in height for Jose Delgado, 3 inches in reach as well, 73 inches to 70. Switch stance for both of our fighters. Haider Amiel, despite being kind of a rookie of sorts, kind of a newbie, 35 from San Francisco, California. 7 of those 11 wins are by finish, 6 KOs and 1 sub. And Haider right now, 3-0 in the UFC. Wins over Fern Garcia and Jiang Li. And he also picked up a big win in March, the biggest of his career, over William Gomez. He actually snapped William Gomez's, I think it was 11-fight winning streak. It was something ridiculous. Did it in the striking. Amazing work. Went to a split decision. Haider Amiel, as legit as advertised, he is a real deal contender. However, his opponent, Jose Delgado, also very legit. 27 years old from Arizona, trains at the MMA Lab. Jerry Cannonier, Henry Cejudo, Sean O'Malley occasionally, a lot of guys there. Currently on a 6-fight winning streak, he has a 100% finish rate, 5 KOs and 4 subs. Had a big knockout over Conor Matthews in his debut in February, and now he's here in the UFC to take on Haider Amiel. This is great matchmaking. This is close matchmaking, and Jose Delgado, 9-1, is on an amazing run. But what I've seen from Haider Amiel, I've liked. I really have liked him. Being able to get past William Gomez was such a stepping stone. I didn't even know if he could overcome it, and he really did. Made the difference with the takedown in round number 3, which was crazy. And as much as Jose Delgado is such an intriguing prediction, I cannot go against a guy who I've watched rise in the UFC and is getting a career-altering opportunity here with a win. He's getting a ranked opponent if he wins. So I'm going to go with Haider Amiel. I'm going to say, since these were such key finishers here, we see these two in a firefight punch out, and Haider Amiel wins. Yeah, it's Jose Delgado, but we're going to get a perspective if he can take a punch. I don't know yet if he can. Now, if Haider Amiel is able to take a punch, he will most definitely beat Jose Delgado. But if Jose Delgado's power transfers to this matchup, then yeah, that'll be nighty night. So we are going to predict Haider Amiel over Jose Delgado by round 2. Round 2, we'll go round 2. Knockout. With that, we get into our final prelim of the evening as Jack the Joker Manson takes on Gregory RoboCop Rodriguez. RoboCop is the favorite right now, -185. Jay Herman, +155. Jack Manson, 24-8. Gregory Rodriguez, 16-6. 6'3-6'1. Height for Gregory. Reach for Hermanson, 77-75 inches. Orthodox stance for both of our fighters. Jack Manson. Coming into this one, 37 years old, from Sweden, but now fights out of Norway. 17 of 24 wins are by finish, 10 KOs, and 7 subs. And of his 8 defeats, he has been finished 5 times. And, you know, this is his first fight since February of 2024. He was linked to one fight in 2023 against Brendan Allen. But other than that, this dude has fought just twice in the last 3 years. Twice in the last 3 years. It's just been inactive. I don't know why Jack Manson has slowly became 37. When at one point he was in his early 30s against Edmund Shabazian and having to fight the Knights against Marvin Vettori, but those days are long gone. Hermanson has kind of watched his UFC chances of getting a title shot fade away, and unfortunately, I don't know if there's much to do. He was able to beat Joe Pyfer in a main event back in February of 2024, but that has been almost a year and a half ago, and it hasn't amounted to much. So Jack Manson back here looking to get a win. We'll see how he does against Gregory RoboCop Rodriguez, 33 years old from Brazil, but now fights out of Florida. 9 KOs and 4 subs give him 13 of 16 wins by finish, and of his 6 losses, he's been knocked out in 4 of them. Gregory Rodriguez is just allergic to a boring fight. This guy is so action-packed. We've watched his rise from 2021 when he was getting knocked down in the Contender Series, then debuting, knocking out Jun Young Park. He was taking on Julian Marquez, Chidi and Chukani, just amazing performances, getting shockingly knocked out by Bruno Ferreira, going on a little 3-fight winning streak, wins over Des Toulin, Brett Tavares, and Christian Leroy Duncan in London. And then so far this year, took on Jared Cannonier, had a fight of the night, and just typical Rodriguez fashion, almost knocked Cannonier out multiple times in round one, sort of let him fight back in round two, was winning round three before getting dropped, then was just so gassed, really showed that, you know, going to a fourth round, it plays the part, can barely even keep his hands up, gets knocked out 21 seconds into round number four. But don't worry, Gregory, I'm definitely going to back you in this one, and I think he's going to put the pressure on and drop Jack Hermanson, maybe get a knockout. Let me get knocked up. I definitely got Jack Hermanson getting knocked down in this one by RoboCop. He's been far more active. I know he took a lot of damage against Jared Cannonier, but when I watched both these guys take on Jared Cannonier, by the way, Jack taking him on in his prime, Jack got knocked out and went down from one punch. Rodriguez was able to eat a number of punches. He just couldn't sustain all the damage that he had taken. So RoboCop over Jack Hermanson. Is a round one knockout too ambitious? I'm going to be ambitious here. I'm saying Hermanson's chin isn't what it used to be, and we're going to go with Gregory Rodriguez by knockout. Following that contest, we will go to our main card. That's right, this is the main card for UFC Fight Week. International Fight Week here. And what kicks off the card? You may ask, some grandiose fight? No. In fact, one of the most random fights to be made, men's bantamweight, Peyton Talbot back in action as he takes on Jungle Boy Felipe Lima. Just such a random matchup to open the card. Peyton Talbot 9-1, Felipe 14-1, 5'10-5'6", height for Peyton, reach as well 70-68 inches, switch stance for Peyton Talbot, orthodox for Felipe Lima. Peyton Talbot +145, Felipe Lima -180. Talbot was the hottest prospect of the year, most projected by most people, including myself, to make a huge run in 2025. But the 26-year-old from Nevada, with 8 of his 9 wins coming by finish, 7 KOs, and 1 sub, who's actually linked to maybe having a homoerotic relationship with Frank Ocean as they are big besties, unfortunately was humbled by Bryony Barcelos in January of this year at UFC 311. Tough stuff. Tough stuff, Peyton, I really know, but they all run into that guy. Everyone always runs into someone, unless you're one of the greats, but unfortunately, Peyton Talbot is not one of the greats, you know? Here's a guy who had a round three, round two, and then round one finish. They were all getting better, runs into Ryony Barcelos. But fear not, Peyton, because Ryony Barcelos did the exact same thing to Cody Garbrandt, and, you know, you being much more greener than Cody Garbrandt, it hasn't aged too terribly. But Peyton, he's back in action, looking to get another win, but he's taking on a tough guy. A tough guy, gotta be honest. Felipe Lima, 27 years old, from Brazil, on a 14-fight winning streak. That was right. This boy lost his first professional fight by knockout and was just kind of like, you know what? I don't think I'm going to lose ever again. 7 of his 14 wins came by finish, 4 KOs, and 3 subs. And yeah, He was a three-time champ across multiple different promotions outside of the UFC. Won his debut a year ago in June over Muhammad Naimov on short notice at featherweight. Then in December of last year, made a fight against Miles Johns and was able to beat him in a closely contested affair. 30-27s across the board. Look, Felipe Lima can get done with the takedowns. It's been Peyton Talbot's weakness so far. I project he takes down Peyton Talbot. Might go the distance, but I could see a Felipe Lima submission. So we are going to ride with Felipe Lima here. But, you know, you never know. Peyton Talbot could whip out those hands, knock out Felipe Lima. But I don't know. I've just seen Lima's on such a winning streak. It's one thing if you're taking on a guy who's like 6-0 coming to the UFC, but 14-1. We've seen him beat Muhammad Naimov, who, by the way, we just saw look super dang good against Bogdan Grodd, and a guy in Miles Johns, who you truly have to beat to prove that you can make it to the rankings at bantamweight. Yeah, give me Felipe Lima. After that, it's all ranked opponents the rest of the way. Yippee! Lightweight action first, as the number 9 ranked lightweight Benil Dariush takes on the now number 11th ranked Hinato. Doesn't have a nickname, but should be Money Moicano. Benil, 22-6-1. Hinato, 26-1. 5'11-5'10. Bit of height for Hinato. 72-inch reaches for both. Southpaw for Benil. Orthodox for Hinato. These two are just deathly similar. The odds makers, -150 for Moicano, +120 for Benil. They've been so close. And man, what do you know? These two are just, it's such a good stylistic matchup. I'm glad we're finally getting this. Benil Dariush, 36 years old, from Iran. Yikes. Benil fights out of California. 13 of 22 wins are by finish, 5 KOs and 8 subs. And all 6 of his losses, he's been finished in. 5 of those by knockout, only once by sub. These two are actually supposed to fight January 18th, but of course, Armin pulled out. They gave the shot to Moicano, and Benil was forced without a fight. But now they're running it back. 6 months later, I'm very happy to see that. Benil, been with the company since 2014. He's had just a crazy run. Crazy run from Benil. You know, fights against Jim Miller, Michael Johnson, Michael Chiesa, Edson Barbosa, Alexander Hernandez. He was once on a 8-fight winning streak, including wins over Drew Dober, Jakar Close, Scott Holtzman, Diego Ferreira. He was on a crazy run. He beat Tony Ferguson. All right, he was one of the original guys to beat Tony Ferguson. You're like, dang, Tony's actually washed, humbled Matheus Gamrot. But then June 2023, knocked out by Oliveira in round 1. December 2023, his last fight, actually, that's right, December 2023, knocked out with a knee and a punch by Iron Tsarukyan in 1:04. Benil has been so inactive, his chin isn't what it used to be, and this might be the end of Benil Dariush, despite being the same age at completely different parts of their career, because Money Moicano is bringing in them dollar bills any chance he can. Hinato Moicano, 36 years old as well, from Brazil, but now fights out of Florida. 12 finishes, 20 wins, 2 KOs, and 10 subs. And 6 defeats. He's been finished 5 times. Been with the UFC since 2014 as well. Dude, these two are so eerily similar. He's had fights against Brian Ortega, Calvin Kattar, Jose Aldo, Chan Sung Jung, Rafael Fiziev, Rafael dos Anjos. I mean, this dude is an absolute animal. Was on a little 4-fight winning streak from 2022 to 2024. Wins over Brad Riddell, Drew Dober, Jalen Turner, and Benoit Saint-Denis. Should have gotten a performance bonus against Benoit Saint-Denis, by the way. Was supposed to take on Benil Dariush instead. Took a title shot against Islam Makhachev, and we all know, submitted with a dart stroke in 4 minutes. But Moicano looking to make his way back. Benil looking to make one more run. The winner of this will be looking up at names like, names like Paddy Pimblett ? Matheus Gamrot ? Dan Hooker ? Yeah, guys like that. So we're going to go with Money Moicano. Look, for being 36, he's in his prime. We'll see how he bounces back from a loss like this on Makhachev 1. And after watching Rafael Fiziev knock him out and seeing him bounce back, after watching RDA bash his brains in for 5 rounds and seeing him go on a win streak and bounce back, I think Money Moicano can get this done here. I'm thinking a round 2 submission. Round 2 appears to be the magic number for Moicano, but watch the hands of Benil Dariush. He can catch you, and he actually has some pretty good grappling of his own. Third fight on the main card, and it's bigger. I'll tell you what. The flyweight bout that isn't a championship fight is bigger than the actual championship fight. Isn't that crazy? That should tell you something about the state of the flyweight division right now. As the number 1 ranked Brandon Royval takes on the number 12 ranked Joshua Van. Incredible. Utterly incredible. Van Royval, the odds keep flipping. Royval should probably be the favorite when they fight, but the odds makers just can't make up their mind. Brandon Royval, 17-7. Joshua Van, 14-2. 5'9-5'5. Height for Royval, as always. Reach for him as well. You know, he always has a bit more reach. 68-65. Southpaw for Royval. Orthodox for Joshua Van. Royval, 32 years old. Van, 23 years old. This dude is 1 year older than me, and he's freaking fighting on the main card of the UFC. Joshua Van is an absolute savage. Rival, 32 years old from Colorado. 13 of his 17 wins are by finish, 4 KOs, and 9 subs. And he's only ever been finished twice in his entire run. He was supposed to fight Manel Cape here. He's actually supposed to fight Manel Cape March 1st. He pulled out, and then Manel Cape pulled out of this one. That was 3 weeks ago. Joshua Van steps in on semi-short notice. Not really. He's had somewhat time to prepare for this one. Brandon Rival, you wouldn't believe it, but this dude is only, somehow, I can't believe I never noticed this, 7-3 in the UFC. He's only had 10 UFC fights since 2020. Averages about 2 fights a year, and honestly, they're always action-packed. He's had 3 fight of the nights in the UFC. He's actually had 4 fight of the nights in the UFC and 1 performance of the night. Pretty cool. Rival is currently on a 2-fight winning streak. Wins in February and October of 2024. Both split decisions against Brandon Moreno and Tatsu Taira. His last loss was against Alexander Pantoa at UFC 296 in 2023 when Pantoa beat him over 5 straight rounds. This dude's knocked out Mathias Nicolau, submitted Matt Schnell. He's beaten Kai Kara-France before, Tim Elliott. Yeah, Brandon Rival as good as advertised. And the only guys to beat him, Brandon Moreno and Alexander Pantoa. Of his 3 professional defeats, Brandon Moreno and Alexander Pantoa. Yeah, that's probably your number 1, 2, and 3. We'll throw Figueiredo in there for being the second best flyweights of all time. I kid you not, some weird hierarchy where Figueiredo's technically better than Pantoa, Moreno's better than Figueiredo, and Pantoa is better than Moreno. So if anything, they're all tied for being second best to Demetrius Johnson, who will, it's going to take a natural talent to be better than him. And you know what? It might be Joshua the Fearless Van, because Joshua Van, guys, 23, like I said, from Myanmar, now fights at Houston, riding a little 4-fight winning streak, 9 of 14 wins by finish, 7 KOs and 2 subs, and this is his 6th fight in the last year. 6th fight in the last year. You want to get even more crazy, this is his 7th fight in the last, I think it is 16 months or something like that. It's ridiculous. Joshua Van currently sitting at 7-1 in the UFC. He's coming off the biggest win of his career on June 7th against Bruno Silva. I mean, insane. Only losses to Charles Johnson in July of 2024 since that. I mean, it looked like he was just clipped in that one, and he's bounced back handsomely. Wins over Edgar Cerez at UFC Noche. Win over Corey Dern at UFC 310. Win over Ray Tassura at UFC 313. He is now a pay-per-view talent. He's now a pay-per-view talent, and he's worked his way onto the main card. And I think my only... Here's the thing. I'm rooting for Joshua Van. I think the entire MMA community is rooting for Joshua Van. The issue is that it's just hard to see him beating Brandon Rival. I can't lie. Brandon Rival is lanky. He does distant boxing. When he needs to land a takedown, he does. He's going to chop you up with a lot of punches. So if you're Joshua Van, first off, you need to get lucky with a punch, which we know you have punching power. You need to mix in takedowns, which is going to be really crucial. And you're just going to need to kind of hope for the best. But Joshua Van isn't really a takedown guy. You know, for most UFC fights, he's much more on the striking edge, especially the last 4 fights. And for Rival, you know, we saw him beat Taera. We saw him beat Moreno. It's going to be tough for him to win here. So we're rooting for you, Joshua Van. But I am going to pick Rival to win this one. Kind of spoil it, but I do think Van is going to look good. Whether he gets submitted in round 1, knocked out in round 2, or goes to decision, fight of the night, either any way it goes, his stock is going to be on top. And, you know, even if I don't think he wins here, when I matchmake him against guys like Steve Ercig, Alex Barreras, Kai Kara-France, Miral Bazzi, I mean, I honestly might lean Joshua Van a bit more. But mind you, he's 23. You know, it's not his time yet. But if he wins and he's ranked number 1, oh my goodness, insane. But this is the next title eliminator right here. So stay tuned, because whoever wins this one is taking on the winner of our next contest as the champion, Alexander the Cannibal Pantoa, the number 9 pound-for-pound fighter, who, by the way, is going on his 4th title defense. How about we move Pantoa up to, I don't know, maybe the number 4 spot, for goodness sakes? Kind of ridiculous. He takes on, don't blink, Kai Kara-France. Pantoa, 29-5, looking to get his 30th win here, takes on the 25-11 with 1-0 contest. Kai Kara-France had so many non-UFC fights before finally jumping ship. 1-inch in height for Pantoa, 5'5-5'4, 2 inches in reach for Kara, 69-67, orthodox stance for both of our fighters. Pantoa looking at about a minus 275 favorite. Kai Kara-France around plus 210 right now. Pantoa, You know him. We've talked about him so many times. 35 years old from Brazil. The win streak's now up to 7. 19 of 29 wins are by finish, 8 KOs and 11 subs. He's never been finished. He's only ever been dropped once in his entire MMA career. That was against Deiveson Figueiredo 6 years ago. And yeah, of course, fourth title defense. This dude's been on an absolute tear. Last loss was in July of 2020. Pantoa been with the UFC since 2017 and, you know, kind of started out iffy. You know, he's kind of 2-fight winning streak, loses to Dustin Ortiz. 3-fight winning streak, loses to Figueiredo. Beats Matt Schnell, loses to Askar Askarov. But then the win streak kicked off. Manel Cape, Brandon Royval, Alex Perez, Brandon Moreno, Brandon Royval, Steve Ersig, and Kai Asakura. That is right. This dude, on his 7-fight winning streak, has beaten all current ranked contenders. It's crazy. He's been the number one guy twice. He's actually beaten Brandon Moreno twice. Fun fact. He has beaten the number 6 ranked Mel Cape, the number 7th ranked Alex Perez, the number 10 ranked Emilia, and even the number 14th ranked Kai Asakura, which was his last win in December, submitting him in round number 2, earning himself a performance bonus. Your only chance is a puncher's chance against Pantoa, because he will grapple you to death. He'll submit you. He is just a savage. By the way, his fight against Brandon Moreno, it might be the greatest flyweight fight I've ever seen. It's up there with Brandon Moreno, Deiveson Figueiredo 1. It's certainly up there, but I don't know, man. It's good. It's good. That was one of the greatest fights I've ever seen. This dude is a nasty. Once he takes your back, like the crank he gets on your neck, the rear naked choke, nasty, nasty work. Pantoa, you know what you're expecting. His opponent, Kai Kara-France, ranked at number 4 currently, men's flyweight division, coming off a win in August last year. 4-minute knockout of Steve Ersig. That was enough to get himself a title shot. 32 years old from Auckland, New Zealand. He trains at Sea Kickboxing with his good buddies Dan Hooker and Israel Adesanya. 15 of his 25 wins are by finish, 12 KOs and 3 subs. And of his 11 defeats, he's been finished 6 times. Kai Kara-France, been with the UFC since 2018. Was on a little 8-2 run. I think it might have been 7-2 to open his UFC career. Losses to Brandon Moreno, Brandon Royval. Then took on Brandon Moreno for the interim belt in 2022. Lost to him again. Fought Amir Albazi on June 2023, which was, I believe, we didn't actually cover that card on the podcast, but I was still talking about cards at that time. And safe to say, he might have got robbed there. I kid you not. I picked Amir Albazi, but dude, he definitely lost that one. Came back after a year and 2 months, beat Steve Ersig, and they're like, yeah, you can have a title shot. And Kai Kara-France, I absolutely love him. He has a puncher's chance. That's at best. I think Pantoa might take him down, might submit him, but I do think you are going to see one of the best versions of Kai Kara-France you've ever seen. But Pantoa, he's kind of in his Valentin Shevchenko mode right now. Keep throwing contenders at him, keep getting different challenges, but keeps getting better. I mean, watching him, like, it's just been a mix. Because Manel Cape was strong first 2 rounds, lost round 3. Brandon Royval dominated him. Alex Perez dominated him. Brandon Moreno, I mean, like I said, fight of the year, it was 50-50. Brandon Royval dominated him. Steve Ersig faced a bit of challenge in 2 rounds, but managed to pull it all together. And the Kai Asakura win was just phenomenal. Just phenomenal. So I do think Pantoa gets this done. Might even go round 3 submission from Pantoa. But Kai Kara-France, I think, might stun him a couple times and get the crowd absolutely buzzing. But a Kai Kara-France win would just be so awesome. I would absolutely love that if Kai Kara-France, who has just lost multiple times to some of these guys like Brandon Moreno and Brandon Fowl, comes back and wins the belt before them. I mean, absolutely crazy. So I actually highlighted Kai Kara-France, but no, I am not doing that. No, we've done this before where I accidentally highlight a fighter. No, no, no. We are picking Pantoa. Pantoa. And I'm even going to date this 6/25 so we know that I didn't fib this. But let's get into the main event. I mean, this is going to be one of those fights where we're all watching our TV. We're all, our hearts are beating fast. We feel a little funny in our stomachs. What a time. I can't believe we get this fight. And it kind of sucks because I love both these guys. Like, every time these guys have fought, I'm always rooting for both of them. So it's going to be tough. But nonetheless, we have to pick. Someone will win. Number 3 ranked Ito Pira and the number 13 ranked Charles Oliveira in the men's lightweight division. Oh, wait, not the men's lightweight division. That's right. The men's pound for pound in the world, guys. That's right. These are two of the greatest fighters you are ever going to see. Utterly insane. But as of right now, Charles Oliveira is officially number 2 in the men's lightweight. He's number 13 on the pound for pound. And Ito Pira is your current men's featherweight champion, I guess, in a sense. Technically, Volk is, but we all know Ito Pira retired and destroyed Volk. So Io Tapera, the unofficial featherweight champion. Not currently ranked, but depending how he does here, we'll see where he ranks. The El Matador is coming in this one, 16-0, undefeated. And DuBronx, Charles Oliveira, 35-10, with one no contest. I mean, the most finishes in UFC history. He's a savage. 5'10 to 5'7, you're going to see 3 inches in height for Oliveira. And you're going to see 5 inches in reach for Oliveira, 74-69. That's where the advantage is going to be for Oliveira, keeping the distance. But it's funny enough, he should close the distance here. That's what he's going to actually want to get done. Orthodox stands for both these gentlemen. Io Tapera, heavy favorite, minus 400. Charles, big underdog, plus 300. Io Tapera, 28 years old, born in Germany, now fights out of Spain. That's why he is the El Matador. 6 KOs and 8 subs give him 14 of 16 wins. By finish, and so far in the UFC, he is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 0. He is on a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 straight. He's on a little 5-fight performance bonus streak, and yeah, this dude's absolutely insane. Debuted against Yusuf Zalal on short notice, up in weight, and managed to overcome the grappling. Then knocked out Damon Jackson. Then knocked out Ryan Hall. Then knocked out Jay Herbert at lightweight. Then destroyed Bryce Mitchell. Then beat Josh Emmett. Then knocked out the greatest featherweight of all time, Alexander Volkanovski. Then became the first man to never just knock out Max Holloway, ever knock him out in 2024. That's right. He is my runner-up, if you could even give a tie, to 2024 Fighter of the Year. Io Tapera is a modern-day McGregor. He is just insane. His power is so crazy. So I'm so curious to see if it translates to lightweight, because we know he knocked out Jai Herbert. We know he can do that, but I think the main question I have is, can he, after officially, not like short notice, taking on Jai Herbert, after knocking out guys like Max Holloway and Volkanovski at featherweight, can he knock out a guy like Charles Oliveira at lightweight? And that will be the question we all need answered when he takes on DuBronx in this one. Charles, 35 years old, you know, some say past his prime, but I mean, this dude is forever just going to be an amazing fighter. From Brazil, 10 KOs, 21 subs, that's right, 31 of 35 wins by finish, and 8 of his 10 losses have came by finish. So yeah, Charles is almost never going the distance, and when he is, it's pretty shocking because it is the last two fights he's been the distance. One of them has an 88% finish rate. I believe that's Charles, and another an 89% finish rate. I believe that is Io Tapera. So, utterly insane. We all know the story of Charles Oliveira. This is year 15 for him. Been with the UFC since 2010. Was going to get cut at one point. Was getting finished here and there. Losing to Max Holloway, Anthony Pettis, Ricardo Lamas, Paul Felder. Then put together just an insane winning streak. I mean, the Jared Gordon, Nick Lentz, David Temer, Jim Miller, Christos Gagos, Caligula, finishing them all, becoming the first man to officially beat Tony Ferguson after Justin Gaethje kind of made us go, whoa, is he washed? The fight against Michael Chandler to officially win the belt, the fight against Dustin Poirier when everyone counted him out, knocking out Justin Gaethje in round one after getting dropped. Unfortunately, the fight with Islam, the bounce back fight against Benil, the close split decision loss to Armin Sarukian at UFC 300, and the last time he fought in November, fight of the night against Michael Chandler. I just rewatched it. As good on the rewatch. He's in a league of his own, and now brings us to this. Tapera versus Oliveira, I think, is a lot more 50-50 than people think, because Charles Oliveira hits hard. He hits harder than Volkanovski and Max Holloway. I just want to tell you that. Io Tapera has not faced someone with the punching power of Charles Oliveira. Even Josh Emmett was not on Charles Oliveira's level. On the ground, probably going to go with Charles. Submission game, finishing game, it's how it goes. But we've seen Ia tested in all these departments. We've seen him hit with big punches. We've seen him be put in submissions. We've seen him be backed up against the fence, and he always finds a way. And after watching what he did to Volk and watching what he did to Max Holloway, it's hard not to pick against him. Now, similar to Brandon Royval and Joshua Van, I'm rooting for Joshua Van this one. I'm going to be rooting for Charles Oliveira. I'm a Charles Oliveira diehard fan, so what I must do, it is this reverse psychology, I must pick Io Tapera officially to win, and I must say a round one knockout. I kid you not, guys. I kid you not. Charles needs to drag this out more. He needs to land takedowns. He needs to get it to the ground, but it's just when Tapera touches you, you go down. You go down, and he sets it up so beautifully. He gets you up against the cage. And when I saw the Michael Chandler fight, it was somehow an inability to finish Michael Chandler, who's such a finishable guy. And just the power, like, obviously he dominated Michael Chandler, but not enough to finish him. So we are going to go with Io Tapera to win this one, to become an unofficial two-division champ, but yes, a champion in two divisions, not simultaneously, and begin his ascent to becoming a three-division champion. So where do we go from here, though, is my question. We'll be talking about that Sunday or Monday, crazy enough. But, I mean, if Io Tapera wins, he's probably got to defend the belt once, and I think Armin Sarukian would be a great start. You can even do Armin versus Gaethje. Winner takes on Topura, but we're all waiting to see what happens with Islam Makhachev and JDM. A lot is going on with double championship fights right now, and it's an exciting time. It's an exciting time to be a UFC fan. Whoever tells you it sucks being a UFC fan must just kind of ignore the fact that, yeah, we have some boring fight nights sometimes, but these big pay-per-views are drawing all the attention. Just be aware of that when people are criticizing it. With that, guys, that's all I got. That's really all I got. Jam-packed episode. I love the episodes like these. Movies, TV shows, WWE, UFC, new fights, new rankings. This is what the Surprise Chef Podcast is all about. I absolutely love it. And, yeah, I'll see you guys next time. You know, jam-packed UFC 317, jam-packed Saturday. Night of Champions. In the meantime, you can watch Succession, go to the movie, see How to Train Your Dragon. I really believe watching on the big screen is such a great experience. It is phenomenal. It is phenomenal. So many good things in the world. God is so good. Praise Jesus, guys. Praise Jesus. Put your faith in him and all will be blessed. But with that, I send you all on your way. Go. Let me know what you guys think is going to happen on all these things I talked about, and have an amazing life. Oh, and did I forget to say something? Oh, yes, I did. I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.